that as the head coach, yes, you make the final decision, but boy, you better make sure you're really a great listener.
Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are fortunate to learn from a former NCAA coach with 28 plus years of coaching experience, with 18 of which being a head coach, Coach Mike Jarvis. Coach Jarvis started his career following his playing career at Northeastern and on to Harvard, both as an assistant coach. Following Harvard, Jarvis went on to Cambridge, Ringe, and Latin High School as his first head coaching gig, which led him to Boston University, George Washington, St. John's, and most recently, Florida Atlantic University. Coach Jarvis has multiple Coach of the Year awards on top of a tremendous 364 and 201 overall head coaching record. So please welcome Coach Mike Jarvis. Video analysis is expensive and your budget probably isn't getting much bigger. Fulcrum Tech is here to help. Used by basketball teams at all levels from Division I all the way to high school, their Angles product is very similar to what you know and allows you to code, capture, and analyze with ease. All you have to do is import the raw video in Synergy with just the click of a mouse. Over the past 2 years, over 60% of Division I teams in conferences such as the SEC, Pac-12, American, NVC, and A-10, just to name a few, have made the postseason, all while using Fulcrum Tech and saving thousands and thousands of dollars compared to their old companies. Reach out to Fulcrum Tech on X at Fulcrum Tech or their sales@fulcrumtech.com. Just shoot them over an email and be sure to mention if you are a Rising Coaches member. Do more, spend less with Fulcrum Tech. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. You have Doug Caputo and Alan Major here, and today we get the pleasure of speaking with a former NCAA head coach, most recently at Florida Atlantic University, Coach Mike Jarvis. Coach Jarvis, what's going on?
Well, I tell you what, this is a great way to start the day on with you guys, and what you're doing is fantastic. Glad to get the call, and glad I accepted it.
No, thank you so much, Coach. It's so good to see you, and I know it's been a while, so this is a great way to reunite.
Amen.
So basically, what we'll do is we'll just kind of hop right into it, and we're just going to go right into what ultimately got you into coaching. And I actually saw something that I think I might know the answer to this, because you played at Northeastern, if I'm correct, played there for a couple of years. Yeah. Your second year ended up stepping away from the team because Coach Dick Dukeshire, and this was a quote from you, said he didn't like you, but then you ended up working at a fish and chip store, if I'm correct, right?
Yeah.
But then ultimately ended up getting back on the team and then turned into and spiraled into your first coaching position at Northeastern. So just talk about like that experience, and then really what made you step away, but then what also kind of brought you back and then started you into coaching and doing what ultimately pushed you away?
Well, you know, I, like most young people back then, thought I was better than I was. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to make the team at Northeastern, coached by probably one of the greatest coaches who ever coached in New England, Dick Dukeshire. And I didn't get very much playing time. Eventually, I realized it wasn't his fault, it was mine, but of course I blamed him. And I quit the team and went back to basically work for my brother and dad at the fish and chip store, cooking fried foods, burning myself like crazy. And my brother said, "What are you, nuts?" He said, "Listen, you get your behind back there and you try to see if there's any way you can get back on that team." So I ate some humble pie, went back, begged for an opportunity to try out again for the team. And I was granted that by coach, and I made the team. And that basically changed the trajectory of my life, because I had always wanted to go back to my high school to teach. But I then realized I was supposed to go back there to teach and coach. So that drove me to go back to the team, started taking notes after every practice, and started to appear for what I thought was going to be a long and illustrious coaching career. And unfortunately for me, I got the teaching job. I couldn't get the coaching job. But as the good Lord would have it, Coach Dukeshire was impressed by my last couple of years with him, and he hired me as an assistant. So I worked during the day and coached at Northeast in the evening, because we used to practice at 6 at night. And that was the beginning of my coaching.
We always love those stories.
Yeah. Was your college coach, was he, or would you consider him your primary influence to want to coach, or were there other people along the way, maybe a college assistant or your high school coach? Were there other people that kind of inspired you to want to get into coaching in addition to your coach at Northeastern?
Yeah, there are usually many people. A lot of times we don't realize that, but I was blessed. I grew up in Cambridge, Mass. We had a real community that we lived in. In fact, I spent most of my young years on Howard Street, and on Howard Street there was a Cambridge Community Center, and the fellow that ran the community center was named Ringe Jefferson, and he taught us the fundamentals of the game, and he was a great role model, great mentor. And so we learned how to play. In fact, most of the kids that I played with in high school, in fact, the best player in the state, a fellow by the name of Larry Stead, whose nephew is Jermaine Samuels, who played at Villanova.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I played with Larry, and Larry led us to, onto victory to be the best team in Massachusetts. And we won the Tech tournament, which was held in the Boston Garden, and in front of 13,909.
Oh. Wow.
And we rode the fire engines through the streets of Cambridge, Massachusetts, after we won the championship. And so Ringe Jefferson taught half of that team how to play in the community center. So he and then I had a little league baseball coach by name of Stretch Headley, and I ended up coaching his son when I was coaching in high school. And Stretch was my little league coach, and he taught me just to love the love of sport, and also that you played this game to win. And he was a great motivator, and he was big, like Coach Dukeshire and like Ringe Jefferson. They were all huge fundamentalists. They were big on fundamentals, and so fundamentals were grounded into my DNA from the very, very beginning. And those three guys, along with my brother Richard, who encouraged me and mentored me and basically guided me, were the main people in my life as far as coaching and wanting to coach and just the way in which I tried to coach.
Wow, that's awesome. I just love a couple of those names, Ringe and Stretch.
That's right.
Those are coaches' names along right there. So,
well, the high school I attended was actually had the same first name as Ringe, R-I-N-D-G-E. I don't know any other people or places with that name, but no. It just so happened that my high school. The first part of the high school that I coached at, where I coached Patrick Ewing, had the same name as my first coach, Ringe Jefferson.
Yeah, Ringe in Latin. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that too, because maybe if people didn't listen to the introduction, we had in the introduction all your steps. And as I mentioned, you started at Northeastern, go on to Harvard, both as assistants. And then, as you mentioned, Cambridge, Ringe in Latin High School, Boston University, George Washington, St. John's, and Florida Atlantic, all as head coaches. in those, as you mentioned, you coach somebody who is some people would say was pretty good at basketball, Patrick Ewing.
Pretty good, yeah. Yeah.
So, just tell us about the opportunity to see him at a young age and then just kind of watch him develop and grow throughout the year. So that had to have been amazing.
Well, it was. And that story is just another one of the many stories that I'd love to tell. And you know, when I was teaching at the high school, I was coaching at that time as an assistant at Harvard University with one of the great Celtics, Tom Satch Sanders, who wore number 16. So during the, you know, mornings I'd coach, I'd teach at the high school and then go over to the college and work with Satch, assisting with the varsity and then coaching the freshman or JV team. We had both at that time. So, you know, when I was teaching at the high school, one day a good friend of mine who taught physical education to in a program called the Achievement School, which was primarily for kids that were assimilating into the Cambridge community, and Patrick Ewing was one of their students. So he brought Patrick down as a seventh grader, I believe. And he introduced me to Pat and said, listen, I'm a football guy. I got this tall kid here. You know, he just came over from Jamaica. He doesn't have a lot of friends. I'd like him to learn how to play basketball so he could make some friends. So he introduced me to Patrick with the idea of Patrick playing to make friends. Well, as I told people, he didn't make too many friends because he was such a fierce competitor. And, you know, just love to compete. But it was, you know, but once again, I had a chance to work with Patrick at the very beginning on his fundamentals. And as the good Lord would have it, 3 years later, when the high school job that I first wanted opened up, I was able to get it. And lo and behold, I'm coaching a sophomore by the name of Patrick Ewing, who becomes really the number one player in America a couple years later. And once again, just another story about how God works and how he works in mysterious ways.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, talk about, because there's a moment when, you know, you're kind of, you know, Patrick's come along when you kind of start this partnership with him. And you kind of, there's a moment where you say, wait a minute, this one can be special.
Yes.
And so kind of talk about that, because there's a probably, and a lot of people don't understand, like, great players aren't just add water situations. Like, there's a lot of time and patience on the front end as they're kind of, especially when someone's raw and underdeveloped like that and just needs to learn how to play. Talk about the patience that it takes, because I think sometimes in our profession, you know, we want guys to come in through the door ready to go, but if they came in ready to go and had everything they needed, they wouldn't need us.
That's right. It's okay.
So talk about that, just the patience that it took with Patrick early on, and then, you know, what that moment was like when you kind of realized, like, wow, this guy can play for a long, long time.
Well, you know, it's funny, when he first started playing, he was obviously tall, but he was very thin and weak, and his hands were awful. And you know, but he had a determination that was only matched by the determination of his mother, who had come from Jamaica and worked at Mass General Hospital and made it possible for one by one for her to bring the family over. So his DNA was basically that of determination, that of work, that of never giving up. And if he ever tried to, she wouldn't let him. Similar to my brother Richard. But so, you know, you start working with a youngster, and the only thing I regret is that I probably didn't realize how much he was progressing. And to the level he was progressing, because I was working with him every day, so I didn't see it like the outside world saw it.
You know? Yeah, that's right.
You know, they saw him, and then the next thing you know, they saw him when he was dominating, and so I saw it in incremental change, incremental steps. Mm-hmm. But the thing that made him so special was the fact that he was taught that, you know, when you get knocked down, you just get up quicker the next time and you just keep moving forward. And I said the determination that his mother had was passed on to him. And, you know, and And you know, I later found out that she had played sports as a youngster and was very competitive. But she had no idea what what his ride was going to be like. I mean, it was all about you play, you know, for enjoyment. You play to try to win. And if you can get an education out of it, because that was her main concern, that he get a degree, college degree. And that, and he promised her that he would, and he fulfilled his promise. And when other guys were leaving college, you know, he stayed and he graduated. And but that was, once again, I mean, that was a tribute to his mother Dorothy.
That's crazy just to be able to get that opportunity. But I mean, I guess anywhere starting there at Cambridge and then moving on to really, as we mentioned, all the other universities that you were head coach, like, was there anything that you feel as a first year head coach that you're like, maybe I could have done this differently? I guess just kind of asking more for, I guess, people to learn off of your great background.
Well, you know what? I got to believe that I don't know of any coach that doesn't second guess himself or doesn't, you know, go and ask questions to try to see if they could get better. So there's, you know, obviously things that you realize you could have done better, you would have done differently, but, you know, you do it the best you know how. And but the beautiful thing is that when you finally realize what you could have done better, just like you guys are doing, you try to pass that on to the next generation. And you try to, you know, prevent people from maybe making some of the same mistakes that you made, and maybe realizing that there are certain fundamental things that you have to do to be successful. And you pass those on to the next and the next. And so, yeah, there were things that I did. If I ever, you know, if you could get a mulligan and go back and do it again, you know, I would have done certainly differently and hopefully better.
What was the biggest thing, you know, because a lot of people, men on the men's side and women's side that are followers or members of Rising Coaches, eventually want to be head coaches. You know, when you slid over, we always, you know, talk about that 18 inch shift, you know, from one seat to the next.
Yeah.
You know, what was the biggest realization and maybe the biggest growth moment for you where you, you know, just going from being an assistant to a head coach, just that, especially that first year when that, I always feel like you just, that year shapes you like none other. You know, when you go from that first year being an assistant to a head coach, what was the big wow thing for you, or the big thing for you where you said, wow, this is, my role is definitely changed now?
Well, I think the biggest thing is you go from being a person that makes suggestions to a person that makes the decision. It's a lot easier to whisper, you know, into the
ear. That's right. Absolutely.
It's a lot easier to do that than it is to receive some of those suggestions. So it's like, you know, I really felt like, you know, I was a good assistant because I always had suggestions, probably too many, probably, you know. And as at times as a head coach, I don't think I listened quite as intently as I should have. I was a much better head coach or assistant coach, I think, sometimes than I was a head coach. So I would say that as the head coach, you know, yes, you make the final decision, but boy, you better make sure you're really a great listener. And I could have been a better listener, to be honest with you.
Did you feel, sorry, Doug, because this is like solid gold for me. And so I know you got another question, but I got one more before Doug gets to his next one. How important did you feel as a head coach? Because I think one of the biggest things I learned is when I got better as a head coach, I started delegating better, especially during practice and letting my assistants grow and develop, you know, because I always like the phrase that practice isn't just for players.
No. You know,
coaches need practice coaching
yes.
on a daily basis. And I could see the guys I had really grow and develop their voice and their delivery and their conviction with things when I just said, hey, you have this shell segment for 15 minutes. Here's what I want, but here's the paintbrush. Do what you have to do to, you know, because I'm still getting what I want, but he's doing it in a way that is in his personality. So did you feel like that was a big deal to give your assistants a voice throughout practice and help them develop as well?
You know what? Yes. Not as much in high school, because your assistants in high school are usually coaching their own team, their JV or the freshman or what have you. So in high school, it's pretty much, I think in most cases, ends up being more of a one-man show. When you get to college, because of the thousand things you have to do off the court as well as on the court, whether you want to or not, you better delegate. But you better make sure you hire the right people first. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure. But you know, once you do and you hire folks, you pay them as well as you can, you know, you want to give them the opportunity to grow like you did. And hopefully you've taught them enough that you have enough confidence in them that you can let them use their voice and be part of the team. Because it's very important for the players to know that it's not a one-man show, that it's all of us. So I tried to, you know, besides breaking up the practice into, you know, big men, small men, whatever you want to call it, and having maybe one coach work with the big guys, another coach work with the guards. And, you know, I always took pride in being the main person with the defense. And as time went on, I would, you know, almost have like my son became when he was my assistant coach. He was sort of my offensive coordinator. And so he basically, I used to say, listen, Mike, you know, I need some fresh ideas on the offensive end. And I would give him that responsibility and he would basically run with that. And then I would be there to support him. So it's, you know, yes, it's about delegating, but then it's about supporting. And it's also about, when necessary, correcting your assistants, just like you want them to, you know, to help you get better. So it becomes a real team effort from the inside out. Make no mistake about it.
And that's the thing, especially you hear when head coaches get Coach of the Year awards or things like that. You know, they're always, at least from what I've heard and seen, is people always say, well, it's to the people around me, you know, because it's obviously it's not you doing all the work. If you got the assistants, you got the players doing all the work, that's making the head coach just, you know, get his experience and get those accolades. But any unique advice for you? So, I mean, since we're kind of going through it, and one thing that, as we mentioned, you were at multiple different assistant positions, but then also a variety of head coaching positions. Was there any unique advice maybe for the interview process for either the assistant roles or head roles that maybe you have for people? Was there anything that maybe happened that you're like, this would be good for people to know?
Well, I think as far as being the head coach and hiring assistants, one of the greatest bits of advice I ever got was from Red Auerbach, who was a mentor of mine. And Red one day, you know, meeting with him after our season at George Washington, and we're sitting in my office, and he says, hey, Mike, you know, he said this before, the first time I ever met him, he said, you know, I may not always be right, but I've never been wrong. I never forgot that. I may not always be right, but I've never been wrong. And then he would go on to give me some advice. And he said, listen, probably the most important thing I could ever tell you is recruit character, not characters. And that applies to not only players, but to your assistants. Because your assistants, for the most part, are going to be the guys going out trying to identify the talent. And they've got to be people of character so they in turn can try to recruit people of character. And, you know, you want them to not only watch and see how many points a kid scores or, you know, how he does it, but you want to see how he is when he's not on the court, when he's on the bench, or when the coach is coming to talk to the team. You know, so you got to get good team guys who have the ability to play at whatever level you're coaching at, and guys who want to work, guys who want to win, and guys that will do what it takes to be successful. And that comes, you know, I think it all goes back to character.
Happy you said that real quick, just because, at least for me being a young coach, like, people would think scouting is easy. And in a term, it is. You know, just because you see a kid going up doing all these windmill dunks and all that stuff during warmups, or he can jump out of the gym, or he's quick or can finish. But, like, that's the obvious stuff. To your point, it took me a couple of years to be able to sit back and really see the kid's character. And I had to sit there and listen to my head coach at previous positions. And I'm glad you said that, just because it's – everybody thinks, at least my first couple of times, I'm like, this is going to be easy. I'm going to walk in. I'm going to know this kid's going to be good. He's going to blow everybody out of the water. But then you start to actually see, exactly to your point, the kid's character, the way he walks himself on and off the court. You know, if he walks past the head coach giving him attitude, I've seen that before, and we've walked out of the gym on it. So,
yeah,
it's definitely a good testament, something that I think people can take a big note off of.
Well, the other thing that I used to, you know, try to do was, if I wanted a player or thought I wanted a player to play for me, I thought it was as important, if not more important, to go and watch him practice. And, you know, for 2 or 3 hours, whatever amount of time the practice was. And you know, there were times when I'd go into a gym really high on a kid and leave the gym high, and then other times go in high on a kid and leave the gym saying, you know what, he's not for me, because he doesn't want to be coached, and he's not going to be coached the way that I coach. And so, you know, you got to get the right personalities and the right kids that are going to be able to play for you and be coached daily by you, because every day is game day. And, you know, I always, that was another thing that, you know, Red and I spoke about, was, you know, every practice you play, you practice as if it's a game. And if you do that, then you got a chance of being successful in your games. So I want to see kids practice.
Yeah, I love this, Coach, because before we logged on today, Doug and I were literally just on this subject, because you don't know this, but Doug is an assistant coach at Chatham University in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And they're obviously the transfer portal opened last week, and that's a whole different conversation altogether. You know, Doug, they had a really good team at Chatham this year, but then he was talking about they might have a possibility of a couple of Division I guards joining the team next year.
Sure.
And I literally, before you logged on, it must not have been 2 minutes before you popped on the screen, I told Doug, I don't care if you have to call a middle school principal. I don't care if you have to go back and talk to a high school guidance counselor. Do every bit of information that you need to do, just to, you know, they're good players. Make sure you know you're getting good human beings before those two guys walk in the door, because you have something good right now. And if your chemistry gets compromised because of one or two guys coming into your program, and, you know, it's one thing to want to seek an opportunity. It's a whole nother thing to think that next opportunity is all about you, as opposed to joining something bigger than you. And so we literally were just talking about this before you got on. It's so good that you brought that up.
No, it's true, because I've seen programs, successful programs, change overnight because of one or two kids. When I was during my early coaching years, there was a UMass had an excellent, they, you know, had just a great program that was built on fundamentals and hard work. And they had a coach by the name of Jack Lehman. In fact, he had coached, he had Julius Erving. And I remember how successful they were. And no matter how great a talent was, how that player basically fit his system of fundamental basketball, just like Julius did. Because when Julius played for him at UMass, dunking was not allowed thanks to Lou Alcindor, the coach Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So they were rolling, and they were the best. They had the best college team in New England for a long time. And then all of a sudden, you know, he recruited a, and I'm not going to mention the guard's name because, to be honest with you, I don't even remember it now. And he recruited this hotshot guard out of New York. And everybody thought that because the level, the talent level went up, the team would go up. But the team went down because the kid did not want to play the way that they needed to play. His way of playing basketball did not meet the coaches, and he didn't want it to. And all of a sudden, they went from being the best to being okay. And so it can happen. It can happen in a minute. And so you gave the young rookie next to you some great advice. And hopefully he heard it loud and clear.
Loud and clear.
Yeah, because most kids that move down think that they're moving down so that they can move up individually. And that they're looking at maybe their numbers, figuring, hey, I'm going to be the big, big fish here. And they're going to, you know, the rest of them are going to swim after me. And when that happens, usually good things don't follow.
And then talk on real quick. I mean, one thing before, or I guess I had two things before we get into our final segment. One of which being, I know you wrote, obviously we do a little research prior to, and one of the quick, easy things that we found was you have a book, Everybody Needs a Head Coach. So just talk about that, kind of what that entails, because we are huge on books. We always talk about those on here. So, I mean, if you want to just give everybody like a little bit of a down low, and then maybe you'll even get a couple more dings and get some more sales from it too.
Hey, you never know. I could certainly use that. I'll tell you what I'd really like for somebody to call me up and say, you know, because what I'm trying to really get going is I'm trying to get my speaking profession up and going to a greater extent. So I'm looking for speaking opportunities. If anybody's looking for a guy to come in and speak to his team or speak to at his church or speak at his school or speak to a business organization, I'm your guy. Cause I got a lot of stories that resonate and
do you ever,
that can be applicable to any level, but everybody needs a head coach, is really, I think what you guys are all about. You're basically relaying that message through rising coaches, letting them know that no matter what level they coach at, they can be coached. Everybody needs a head coach. We all have a head coach. You know, I always basically start out by talking about the coaches we have on this side. And then, you know, obviously, you know, I believe in the good Lord and his son and the Holy Spirit, and you know, you hope that everybody would accept, you know, him as the head coach. So we all need a head coach, and there are lessons that we can learn, that we learn, that are applicable, that can be transferred over to everything that we do in life. So the book Everybody Needs a Head Coach is it's 23 relatively short stories. It makes for a rather thick book, but there's 23 stories about relating to 23 things that people that you need as a head coach, and you get from your head coach. You know, whether it be the ability to communicate, whether it's the ability to motivate, whether it's the ability to you know, your commitment, your character, your courage, etc. So what I did was I took 23 things that you know, you that we need to learn, put it put each one into a chapter unto itself, and tried to make it personal in terms of relating it to a personal story. And then in each of the chapters, in addition to the stories, there are questions that basically the reader can ask of himself or ask of others, and answer and create some dialogue. So it's been good for an individual and good for a team. And some folks have even used the book because there are Christian principles that are built into the book in every chapter, that the book has also been used as a Bible study. And I use that. I sometime will go out, and if I'm doing a men's a workshop or a keynote speech at a men's conference or a retreat or what have you, you know, I can draw from the book, and then after everything ends, if they wish, they can get the book and have it in their library.
The other thing you should contact is you should contact Audible, Coach, because they need you narrating books for other people on Audible. So you got the voice for Audible, for audiobooks as well. So you might want to contact those folks.
Well, your voice, you got a pretty good voice too. And if you know or you have a name and a contact at Audible, let me know, because right now, hey, I could use the cash, you know.
Well, when it comes time for this pod to get dropped, we'll mention your speaking, and then if anyone wants to contact you, if you don't mind, we could just post your email along with the podcast when it comes out, if people want to reach out to you about any speaking opportunities. And then we can also mention the book as well. This podcast will probably drop, what do you think, Doug, in about 2 months? Well, I'll send it to you when it comes out, so you can share it with whoever you like.
Excellent. That would be fantastic. And once again, it can be, you know, it can be a coach, it could be a school, it could be a church, it could be wherever, you know.
Sure.
Folks think that it would be applicable. That would be
absolutely fantastic. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Oh yeah, we will.
You'll be back on the road.
That's
we will okay. Get him back traveling.
And yeah. that, those are good problems.
Yes, and my wife would be very happy to have me out of the house from there.
So I have to ask you too, before we get to the final segment, this is one thing I made sure to add in there. What's the status on Papado? So I was reading something, and what that is, and maybe I'm saying it wrong, but I read an article that was speaking on that you wanted to get or buy a horse to run in the Kentucky Derby, and you were going to name it Papado. So I'm just curious as to if you have that horse yet or not.
Oh, I tell you what, if
it's almost that time of year.
Oh, it's awful. I tell you what, that's probably been one of my weak points and downfalls in my life was playing the stupid ponies. But when I was younger and I had money, and I thought I was going to just always have it, I enjoyed going to the races. And then I end up in New York, and, you know, you got Belmont, you got the Belmont Derby and all that. I mean, you got it all. And I mean, I used to have the best of the best seats and the best of the best, whatever. And I can remember being in the paddock, you know, when they're saddling up the horses for the Derby or whatever. And I had this dream that someday I'd own a thoroughbred that would race in the Derby. And I would name him after the guy that introduced me to the horse racing, my dad. And my brothers actually gave him the nickname of Papadou.
Papadou, okay, so I didn't say it wrong.
Instead of calling him Pop or Pap or whatever, they said Papadou. So I was gonna name the horse after my dad, Papadou. So,
okay.
Yeah, so it was Papadou.
All right. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, that's unique. I was curious. It said once you retire, and I'm like, well, do we have the horse or
no?
Now I'll start putting in on it at that point.
But I made a mistake once, and I actually went into a little bit of a partnership on a horse. And there's a reason why they call it the sport of kings, because you got to be a king. You got to have king money to be in that business.
That's true.
Because I tell you, other than that, I mean, you're going to lose your shirt. And I like who was foolish enough to get into that. Thank God I was able to get out of it when I did, because it was just throwing money out out the window.
Yeah.
Before Doug gets to his last thing, Coach, I have one more question, because we're in that time of year, and even though this pod will drop as guys are still probably looking for jobs, you know, with the merry-go-round being as it is right now.
Yes.
If someone is preparing for an interview, what would you tell them to give them the best shot at presenting themselves in a great way?
Well, I would tell them, first of all, to do like what you guys have done. And I would tell them to really do a great job of scouting and preparing. Scout out the school, what the school mission is. Scout out the primary influences, the primary decision makers, and particularly the guy that you're going to answer to, whether it's the AD or the vice president or the president himself, whoever it is, and really know, and really, really know that you could you can have a good relationship with that person. Because at the end of the day, no matter how good you are, it really ends up being more about the relationships that you have with the people that make the decisions as to who they're going to hire and who they're going to fire. And I was fortunate enough in my first couple of jobs, I worked for some incredible people. And as time went on and I moved up the ladder, the people weren't quite as incredible. Or credible. And you know, you got to make sure that the person you work for doesn't have an ego that's the size of the school that he works at, because many times it becomes a personality thing. And at the end of the day, if you don't control, you know, write that check, which you don't, then you can't control your fate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Okay. So I'd say do your homework, do your research, and try to find a really, really good match. And it's not always about the money, even though because we're human, it many times that becomes the deciding factor. But in the long run, that's not the most important thing.
Yeah. No, I love that. Yeah. Mark Few has a quote I heard long ago. He says, don't mess with happy.
Yeah.
And people have asked him about Gonzaga, like, hey, why don't you move to the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or, you know, other locations? And that's one thing I heard him in an interview one time. He mentioned, don't mess with happy. Like, there's something to be said for being at a place. And it's such a fit. It's such a fit there, of course.
Yes.
With him. He's obviously got a great relationship at this point with the administration and things like that. But he goes fly fishing in the off season, and he's able to kind of enjoy that part of it as well. Like,
yeah.
he doesn't need to feel like he needs to be in New York City or LA. Like, he's totally happy in Spokane.
Well, you know, I remember a couple of the Final Fours, Mark would actually seek me out and talk about things just like that, you know. And I remember, I forget what year it was. It was probably, I don't know, it was after his Gonzaga team beat my team or before that, when, you know, we were talking about jobs, and Mark would always be, and rightfully so, being offered these bigger, much better paying jobs. And at the end of the day, he did what I didn't do. He stayed at a smaller school. And I often regret making the move myself to the bigger, to the more glamorous, to the brighter lights. So bigger isn't always better. And I should have been asking him the question instead of him. I probably gave him the right answer, but I didn't give it to myself.
That's why
everybody needs a head coach.
Like that. That's a
perfect
Perfect book plug right there. Yeah.
The funny thing is, I already wrote it down. So yeah, we'll be getting to that one here shortly. But what we'll do is we'll cut to our final segment. It's just three quick hitters.
Okay.
Just three questions just to kind of learn a little more. And then a final question at the end to wrap it up.
Okay.
So first things first, you don't necessarily have to say the player's name, but just pick a favorite player that maybe you've had or maybe a couple players. What were two of their characteristics that you're like, this is what I really loved about a player?
Well, I mean, obviously, no matter what I say, I mean, and I think we both agreed that, you know, talent is very important. Now,
of course,
let's go on the assumption that the players are talented.
Okay.
I would say that probably the most important things is that they want to win. Their goal is to cut down the nets and put a ring on their finger. So I'd say the desire to win. And then the desire, then the added, the work ethic. So you want to win and you're willing to work to win. So winning,
those are two things that can be conflicting too.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to win, but you don't want to work, like, what do you got?
Hey, you know what? You got a talented player that's on a losing team usually.
Yeah, that's so true. That's right. So
somebody who needs a head coach.
That's right. And is willing to listen and work with that head coach.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
So the second one would be for you. This is more past tense, but after games, after practices, you had a long day, maybe a lot of travel, a lot of personal stress from work. Like, how did you maintain your personal stress throughout your job?
I probably didn't. I think my wife did that for me. I was blessed in the sense that I had my family either in total or almost in total with me on the journey. When I got the head job at George Washington, I asked my wife to basically, you know, give up what she was doing and coach me and be with me and travel with me, so that my wife traveled with me. And then when I had my son, it was my son, my wife, and I. So 3/4 of my family was together almost all the time. So it was the family that really kept it all together. My daughter, unfortunately, or fortunately for her, was, you know, making her own way in her own way. And but so it was family. I think what kept it together for me was the fact that we were together as a family, and we traveled together, and we, you know, after every game, you know, we would go out and eat together with the assistant coaches. And, you know, and like I said, you know, you spend a lot of time on airplanes and buses and trains. And if you got your family with you, it doesn't seem like work. It's almost like you're on a extended holiday.
No, I love that. Yeah. And you kind of built in the balance of it. You kind of built it in internally, so you didn't have to go seek the balance away from what you were doing. It was a part of it.
It so, was.
You know,
and I tell you what else I think it did. It kept me away from a lot of temptations and a lot of trouble because my wife was there.
That's right.
No more horse races.
I was going to say, no ponies on the road. Yeah, no ponies on the road.
That's right. And you know, there's a lot of different types of ponies. So, yeah.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yeah. Not just at the track.
That's right.
That's right.
And then the last one, I put this in just because it's interesting. It's more like when you were a head coach, LeBron and JJ Redick. Now, I'm not sure if you know, they have a podcast and they actually talked about this. So LeBron had a one belief, but I just kind of wanted to see your side of things. So, like, do you hunt for a 2-for-1 shot with about 45 seconds left, or do you slow it down? And do you go for one shot and then just rely on your defense to get a good stop in the final seconds?
Well, I would have, because of my mentality as a coach and because of the way in which I coached, I would have gone for the one good possession and give you a little bit less time because I'm going to stop you. And, you know, defense was my, was what I put, rested my hat on. And I got my team to really believe that, that, you know, if we could make the stops, we could win the game. And, you know, during most games, there comes a point in time in the game where if you get three stops in a row and score two or three of those times, you got a good chance of winning. So defense would be the key for me. So I wouldn't be two for one because I'd be much more worried about my team rushing. Who would try to get that first shot? So I wanted to have a little bit more control at the offensive end. And then I thought that all of the work and effort we put in at the defensive end would help us get the victory.
Perfect. I like that. I like that. Yeah. And then the final question we have to top it off is your best piece of advice for young rising coaches trying to get their foot in the door. And then how can they accomplish that?
My best piece of advice would be for anybody rising, falling, what have you, to make sure you try to find the best possible mentor that you can. And to find, so I need two parts, A and B, both have to do with the act of mentoring. I think we need to be mentored, and then we need to find somebody to mentor. You guys are mentoring many, and I think that's incredible. And if you had room for a third person, keep me in mind, because what you guys are doing is really what I think is the most important thing, and that is you're developing that next generation. And why not give them the opportunity to learn from other people, the good, the positive and the negative, and then hopefully eliminate a lot of the mistakes that most of us have made.
Well, Coach, honestly, I'll share this with you. You know, before Doug and I joined Rising Coaches, we told the owner of the platform that, you know, it can be a bit of a misnomer because sometimes people think Rising Coaches is trying to be a, you know, we're trying to decide who's rising and who isn't. And that's not our, you know, I told the CEO personally, if you want me to be a part of this, I'm not doing that.
Right. I said,
to me, Rising Coaches should be about rising the profession.
Amen.
And raising our game. And this game is, you know, what this game has meant to all of us. I'm struggling to find words, but you already know what I'm feeling.
I do.
You know, we can't express it, what this game has meant to us. And for the time that we're a part of it, you try to give it all you can while you're a part of it. You try to be the best steward you can while you're a part of it. But then you try to look back and see who you can bring with you along the way as you look over your shoulder. So we talked about doing a reflections series with this pod, and this is actually going to be part of our reflection series, because what you shared, it's just been solid gold. And it means so much to us that you would choose to do this. Don't be surprised if we have you back on sometime down the line, because Doug and I will probably, when we hang up, think of three or four of the questions that we wanted to ask you that we could do this all day long. But I just personally want to thank you so much for doing this. Selfishly, it's great to see you again. It's an excuse to reconnect with you, which I've thoroughly enjoyed. And defense was your hard hat, because I remember at Charlotte, our team's trying to score against you and being very, very difficult to do. So our guys probably still have a few bruises from the Florida Atlantic Owls on the defensive end. But this has just been solid gold, Coach. Honestly, what you shared, it's just been right down the alley of what we're trying to grow and develop here with Rising Coaches and this platform. It was already great before we became a part of it, and we're just trying to make it 1% better as long as we have a chance to have some say in what we deliver.
Well, I would say you're doing just that. And you know, you got a great model, And thank you for the opportunity to be a part of it. And I'll be very disappointed if you don't call me again. Okay. I'll be even more disappointed if some people don't call me to come and speak to
them. Pressure's on, Doug.
I was gonna say, don't put this on me.
We've got to get the word out, man.
And I'll have you speak with us.
Okay. And hey, listen, and I mean, you know, it's something that I enjoy doing, and it's something that I think that I'm supposed to do. And I'm just trying to create opportunities to do it, you know, by reaching out to different speakers, bureaus and individuals. And this is an opportunity for me to, you know, to try to continue to be somewhat relevant. So I appreciate you guys for the opportunity. And you never know. I mean, God works in mysterious ways. There might be somebody that's listening today other than a young rising coach that wants to hear from a veteran. You know, I often thought, you know, it'd be great if I got a call one day from a young, maybe there's somebody out there, and I'll throw this out too. There might be a rising coach that gets an opportunity of a lifetime to be a head coach. And he's smart enough to say, you know what? Let me do what most people won't do today. Let me call an older, experienced guy and see if he would work with me, maybe assist me. And so that, you know, I originally, and I'll say this in closing as well, that my dream job was to be my son's assistant coach. But unfortunately, when they got rid of me, they also got rid of him. And that never happened. But who knows, maybe that still might happen, you know, because I felt that I could have coached until the day I died, which would be hopefully around 100 years of age or more. But, you know, I could be the Abraham of coaching.
That's right.
The oldest coach to ever coach in the history of basketball.
Yeah. Or the Methuselah of coaching. Maybe there's a Methuselah out there as well. You never know.
You never know. But you know what? You know, we hear about, you know, like, there's all kinds of isms. Unfortunately, we hear too much about racism. We hear too much about sexism. We hear all these isms. And the one ism that I think is probably the one that really, really, I know hurts me the most is ageism. Because we're also in a profession where experience and longevity is almost like a negative. Everybody wants the young Turk instead of the older wise guy. And just for example, I know you love doing these podcasts, but you, for example, someone should call you and say, hey, would you consider working with me maybe as an associate or as an assistant or as an advisor? And I still believe that that's something that I could do. And you know what? I would love to do. So I just want to put that plug in as well. So I've got enough plugs in this show.
That's great. I love it. I love it.
And before we get to the closing remarks, everybody needs a head coach. It is on Amazon for about, you know, you can easily find it, be able to purchase it. And we'll throw our last plug in there before we hop off. I already looked it up. Don't worry. I already got in there.
And if for some reason you can't find it, just call me or email me at coachmikejarvis@gmail.com. Okay.
Awesome, coach. Well, thank you again for sharing everything with us. And that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Again, you got Doug and Alan and Coach Mike Jarvis joining us today. Keep working and keep rising, coaches. Take care, everybody. Prepare your team for success this season with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball, the official number one selling shooting machine in basketball. If you're looking to transform and focus your team's training efforts, all you have to do is mention Rising Coaches or tell them we sent you with the Rising Coaches Podcast for an additional $300 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.